You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, and available on ruhisleep.ca. And welcome to episode 12 of the Sleep in Society podcast, the final episode of 2019.
Wow. Yay. Amazing. Cheers. 12 episodes.
In 2019, yeah, it's been quite the journey. I think we've covered a lot of great topics. More to come. We sat down and mapped some things out.
We've barely started.
I know, it's very exciting.
Organization, mm-hmm. Yay.
What's very exciting is that, like, now that we've mapped out the next couple of months, it's kind of like, okay, like, we're all pumped about it and we're excited for everyone else to hear about it, but you have to wait.
Yep.
So.
Because we need to rest.
We need to rest, yeah, we're not going to do
it. We've been at it pretty hard.
Exactly,
it's been hardcore. Yeah.
But today we're going to talk about workshops, the workshops that you, Ruhi, have been doing really for quite a while since kind of we all connected. We know you've been doing these workshops and we got a chance to actually go to one, which is fantastic. And we're going to talk about Andrew and my experiences with that and talk a little bit about where these workshops are and a little bit about the differences from you work with different size of groups and mm-hmm. different age ranges. So
yeah.
Do you want to give us just a brief overview of what types of workshops you've been doing and who has been part of those workshops?
Absolutely. So I initially started this in 2014, and I started this with my son's class.
Mm.
And that was he was in grade 5 at that particular point. Now he's in grade 11. And initially when I started this, it was more just to introduce them to the idea of sleep, because that was a big part of my conversation with my son. And I thought, oh, if my son is, he's been part of my case study on shift work, and he is very familiar with the ideas of sleep, and yet we're still having, you know, issues in terms of regulating how are other kids
mm-hmm.
Going about it, and how, you know, in terms of where they are with
yeah.
their understanding
yeah.
of sleep. So we started with that, and initially I would just collect questions from them. So teachers would send me a bunch of questions that kids would write, and I'd form a workshop around that.
Mm-hmm.
So initially, for the first couple of years, this is what I did with various age groups. And then from there, these were just conversations at that
yeah.
point.
Well,
like, just
it, yeah.
literally, these were just conversations. I would come in, I would talk about, and I would make sure every question was included. And then we would talk about that and then have more questions. And from there, I thought, oh, wait, like, this needs to be a little bit more visual, because
sure.
we all learn differently. Some kids are more visual, some, you know, and I am quite visual. So.
And I want to make sure I understand this process correctly.
Yes, absolutely.
You know how I like to make points for other listeners.
Yes, certainly.
You took questions and thoughts from young people and formed what the conversations would be with them around those questions.
Yes.
So you asked young people what they wanted to know and what questions they had. And then
About sleep.
And then
everything about sleep. Yes.
And talked about them and created conversations.
Yes.
And even if there wasn't a clear answer, you went on that journey with them.
Absolutely.
So there you go. The point I'm trying to make, and if people can't sense my sarcasm, is that is not done. That is not done in our education system. That's not done in our workshop system. I ran a youth group for 10 years. I sat in a room while people came in to work with young people, and they never asked them, hey, what do you want to know about this topic?
Yeah.
So right from the beginning, you're already doing this in a unique way and a different way, an innovating way, and a very good way that I'm sure is why you've been doing it since 2014 and still are doing it. But I just wanted to take a moment to point that out, because I think that deserves some – I was going to say accommodation, but that's not the right word.
Commendation.
because you deserve a hotel room. But, you know, it deserves to be noted that you took that process, because it's not done anywhere. And I can say for sure that there are people listening who are probably thinking,
that's
not done.
That. Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Sorry to break the train of thought,
no.
But I thought that was an important moment to say this is great.
Yeah, no, I think it's important. I mean, I know what I know, but I don't know what they know.
Yeah,
and I think it's
absolutely.
Really, and I think their questions were fantastic. Some of them were like funniest things. And you're going, and you would have to, because I think I've been at sleep for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you kind of like, you understand it inside out.
Sure.
But when certain questions come across, like, you know, why do we, in terms of why do we dream, why do we have like dream in colors? Or is there like black, do we dream in black and white? It just stops you for a second and you're like, wait a minute. I need to look into this further.
So there were questions asked that you weren't thinking were going to be asked.
Oh, always, to this day, to this very day, there are questions that are being asked that I go, oh, wait a minute, I had not
thought of that. Do you notice a lot of repetition, or is it usually unique?
Well, it might be repetition for me, but I think it's unique to them.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, it could be the same questions, but in a different way or different form. But it's always interesting the way it comes from. Because as we are having these conversations, as we've talked about this, that I want their reality taken into account. I want their understanding taken into account, where their concept formation is. And address it accordingly. Yeah. And sometimes I still have to say that I do go a little academic, and I have to step back often. And I like them to deconstruct me, actually, and deconstruct my concepts.
Yeah.
I'm very open to that.
Yeah. And so once this process, so you were explaining that the process of getting these questions and going in and starting these conversations, how did it continue to grow? Like, how did these workshops continue to go? I know you're talking about your son's class at the time and moving it through his age group. Like, did you continue to sort of follow as he grew up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Classes? Yeah. And with his age group, I think I followed that particular age group up to grade 10.
Wow.
Yeah. So I followed them from grade 5 onwards till grade 10. And mostly a lot of it was same cohort up until grade 9.
Hmm. Wow.
In grade 10, they changed.
Yeah,
but it was the same. And it was still interesting because even after 5 workshops that they've had with me, they would still have questions.
Of course,
it was never like, oh, my gosh, Rui's here again talking about me. Oh, my gosh.
Well, I feel like this, like you brought up, that sleep is something that it's always a constant, and there's always things to learn and grow with. So I feel like it makes sense that they would all have to have questions. But again, going back to the visuals that you were talking about, I think because you use visuals so strongly in your presentation that I feel like it makes sense that young people would be engaged by that. We learn in a visual way, and of course more questions would come up because the visuals that you create, and it will kind of try to explain this a little bit, but honestly, you have to see this. You can't just listen to the podcast to like understand these visuals. But you represent academic concepts
Indeed.
In a visual way.
Beautifully.
Very well
constructed.
Yeah, absolutely.
By Jillian.
Fantastic visuals. Mm-hmm. And I think it presents it in a very accessible way. That if you're, there's lots of people who are not academic learners, and I actually put myself in that category. I don't think I'm an academic person, mm-hmm. but seeing those concepts in the way you present it.
They're scientific concepts that are very accessible.
Yeah.
Visually beautiful and very accessible. And because it's, we've introduced, you know, there is an actual protagonist.
Yes.
To this, Alex.
Yeah, there's a story.
Yeah, there's a story. Yeah. Alex is the protagonist. And through Alex, we introduce these incredible concepts of importance of sleep, circadian rhythms, chronotypes, you know, various hormones. All of these are introduced through Alex. And Alex, by the way, is way more popular. Kids always go talk about Alex more than anything else.
Well, you've created a character to follow. So, I mean, it was a brilliant move because you like you're saying, you have a protagonist. You have someone that you can – that's why stories, I think, are so powerful in books and movies and even music, is if you can attach yourself to someone else, you can step back and be a little bit more – easy to talk about. It's easy to talk about Alex. It's hard to talk about Mike.
Like Mr. Rogers and his puppets.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mr. Rogers. Yeah. What an educator.
Absolutely.
Like, seriously,
Mr.
if you
Rogers
think about
it. Incredible.
Yeah, for sure.
So one of the visuals, or a couple of the visuals that I wanted to just talk about in terms of sticking in the brain. Like that's the biggest thing for me coming out of the workshop and kind of my personal experience was there are visuals I can still see. Like if I close my eyes, I can still see. I can see the character being crushed by the day.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the visuals was like you showed the, you know, how it goes throughout the day. You start up here, but then throughout the day, the character's shrinking and shrinking and shrinking and shrinking.
Getting heavier and heavier.
The
backpack gets heavier and heavier.
And it's such a strong visual image that you just don't think about it. Even though you get tired at the end of the day and you feel worn out.
Mm-hmm.
I've never thought about it in that way.
Yeah.
It's just like you put it in such a context that I would never think about it.
Yeah, it was an interesting concept to introduce in terms of like sleep pressure building up. And a sleep debt, like those ideas that we don't even think about it. And that's actually very, that comes, that's something that, as you said, repetitive. That's something that kids bring up over and over again, various things about it. They go, so, well, I get 4 hours of sleep or 5 hours of sleep a week, a day, and then how am I able to make that up? So then you bring that concept up and you have a conversation about it. Because in the end, what you want, they're not going to take everything. That's an impossibility, right?
Sure.
You have an overall understanding. But something needs to ping with them.
Yeah.
And something they need to take with them that'll help them be better in terms of regulating themselves, which is such a difficult process at that age, right?
It might be part of the reason why you find that they constantly have questions is if within your workshops and seeing it and the repetitiveness, they're taking as much as they can from each thing, but maybe there are just concepts that they need to go back to and continue to talk about.
Absolutely.
You know, that makes sense
to me. And obviously. I mean, for me too. Like how many times, like any difficult concept, I can't grasp it within a single go. It's something that requires refining. Even when we are creating visuals, Jillian and I, it's revisited like so many times before I can say, oh, yeah, that is absolutely clear.
Yeah.
That makes complete sense to me. When I look at it or somebody else looks at it, they go, oh, I get it. I get it. That explains the concept beautifully.
And how is that process for you? Like, do you find that you explain to Jillian what you're looking for? She comes back, you go back and forth, and you just find something that really speaks to you that you think is going to hit? Or are you looking for feedback elsewhere too?
We understand each other's language really well.
Yeah.
We've developed a relationship over quite a long. I have to say, Jillian is also my daughter-in-law.
There you go.
We
That's
great. We understand each other's language beautifully, and over time we have refined. When we first started the visualization, we locked ourselves. Actually, we were in the sanctuary,
nice.
One of those rooms, and we locked ourselves in for 2 days. Where we would take breaks and go home and sleep, but we would come back to that room and think about how we wanted to proceed with this when we initially started.
And for those who don't know, the Sanctuary is a co-working space.
Indeed,
that
beautiful.
Wonderful space.
Wonderful space, downtown Kingston.
And I mean, it's good for that. I find it's good for that type of thinking. I mean, it's downtown. It's in a good location. You can take a walk if you need to take a break. They've got good rooms. You can kind of
They're
go
wonderful.
Away
and
do that. So, I mean, that's a fantastic process to really take that time to let's map this out and go through these visuals. Because really, that is a huge draw, I think, to the workshops that you do is these visuals are so well put together and they match your concept so well that it makes it very easy to understand.
Mm-hmm. And they're beautiful. Art pieces of art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So talk more a little bit about how that workshop grew from there. Once you had those visuals, what sort of happened next on this journey? So after 2014, you've started to collect things, you've got these visuals. What sort of happened next and what sort of age groups did you end up working with?
Initially it was with elementary schools. And then from elementary, I went into middle schools. And then from middle schools is where I went into high school, which, by the way, high school is one of the most difficult audiences.
Really?
Ever.
Why is that?
Grade 9, 14, 15, you're just entering adolescence.
Yeah.
School environment is different. You've come from a very protected middle school environment, single teacher to multiple different teachers, a huge shift in everything.
Yeah.
And they're also trying to figure out where they are, like, you know, themselves as human beings.
Yeah.
And so it's a very interesting age group to engage in, and I think food really helps.
Yeah, you were saying, so you had lots of food.
Lots of food.
To us about that. What types of food do you bring in? Where did that concept come
from? I've always did that.
Okay.
I've always done that. Food is a big part of my life. Food is a big part of how, in terms of just my being, how I've like developed friendships, great friendships over food. I met my husband over food, like all of those things. And food is wonderful. It's like think about it, sitting around a circle, around a fire, sharing something. It opens up certain pathways in your brain. The smell of warm bread, and, you know, and eating. And eating together in a community, having the same food,
it's
a wonderful thing. And then it's and you learn better if you're fed, you know, because some of these kids don't have food.
No, it's very true. Yeah. No, absolutely.
And I think it's a wonderful thing. We're talking about sleep, which is coming from really a very nurturing place from within me. I understand it's my job. This is what I do. It's like it's part of my life. But when I'm going into these classrooms, I don't see other people's kids.
Mm-hmm.
I see my own child.
Yeah.
And that changes. Like, how do I want to interact with them changes. It comes from a deep nurturing place. So.
So what
is a good
food,
place to start?
How much food are we talking? Like, how much food overall? Like, do you got any number here? Like, is so much food that you bring
in?
It's
a lot of food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. I think it's good.
It's fresh bread that Virgil does at Pasta Genova.
Oh, nice.
And he makes it especially. I'm very grateful. He's very kind.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And we bring in fresh fruit. And introduce chocolates, all those lovely things that make for a lovely little picnic and to have a conversation about something.
Yeah. So you're painting a very nice visual for us. Let's finish the painting without giving away context of the workshop.
Yeah.
Let's finish this painting. So you're in a classroom with groups. You've brought food in. Everyone's grabbing some food. What happens next? What else can you paint for us if there was a snapshot of the workshop? What does it look like?
Everybody's having food.
Mm-hmm.
We have a conversation.
Yeah.
It's fairly dynamic.
Yeah.
I ask them to be able to ask me questions, interrupt the process, because I do not like just talking. I like having a conversation,
yes.
and amazing things come. And I don't necessarily finish the entirety of presentations all the time, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Because we are introducing concepts, and fairly difficult concepts, if you think about it.
Yeah.
And then we want to go further into it, and therefore somebody would ask a question, and we would build a conversation around it. And I like them to be able to move. If they need to get up and move about, if they want to go grab some more food, they do so freely. And conversations can vary from very academic oriented to very personal. And when you're asking them some of them, you're saying, okay, so what do you think? How likely are you to be able to put your phone away prior to going to bed? Initially, they'll be like, it's so difficult. We are not doing this.
But by
the end of the conversation, they can say, we can do 20 minutes. We can put it away. And that's huge if you think about it.
Oh, absolutely.
Like to just say from where, like, we're not putting our, what do you mean put our phones away?
Yeah.
Like those are our connection to ourselves. Like we, you know, and then to be able to say, we can do 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you're like, you can do 20 minutes and then encourage your friend to do it for 20 minutes. And let's like all try to better ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's amazing.
Oh, I think that's very impressive considering the day and age. If you can go from not conceiving being away from your phone to being away for 20 minutes, that's absolutely a good thing. Like, that's a great step forward.
Mm-hmm. And we must take their reality into consideration.
Absolutely.
Always.
And I like how you're saying that these workshops, I mean, they must go into directions that you don't plan on it. Because if it's based on the questions, it could be, like you're saying, it could be very academic or it could be very personal.
Mm-hmm.
It depends who's in the room,
Indeed.
What questions get asked.
Yeah.
And
where
makes
you
your
coming
workshop different
from,
every time. Yeah.
What your priorities are. Like, you can have people who are very athletic who will have questions that are related to sleep and athleticism or academia, or kids who just are like, you know, we're not getting good sleep. Like, what do I do about this?
Yeah.
Like, these are my barriers, which are huge in some cases. And then you're thinking, okay, how can we bring everybody else around it together to support this one individual?
Yeah. No, and I think that sense of community is very clear from taking the workshop, from being there. You know, we're talking about, we had a lot of mixed ages in there because there's parents as well as like
teens. The one you attended.
The one we attended had a mix.
Yeah.
So the conversation did actually go at the end in different directions. Once you sort of presented the concepts, there were a lot of questions that were different mm-hmm. from where even you were talking about. So things did kind of flow and change, which is unique, because no matter what, if you get people in a room, everyone's going to come from it from a different standpoint.
Absolutely.
And like you said to our question about repetitiveness, mm-hmm. something that may be repetitive to you might be new to someone else.
Absolutely. So I don't take that for granted ever. Yeah. Ever. And in terms of like those big presentations, it's very different, because then when you have large numbers, which
yeah.
I have, like
yes,
where
have.
I've
yeah.
had like 250 yeah. students at a time, then you are just talking and giving them, in the end, their questions.
Sure.
Whereas in classrooms, I want them to interrupt me.
Yeah.
And
I
like usually their hands are up, and I usually go, yeah. you know, I usually signal them that I'm coming to them after I finish this sentence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter whether they go back or forth. It's just, it's important that each question is addressed, that the conversation,
yeah.
and it's a conversation, that they're not being told what to do. It's like,
yeah.
let's work something out together.
And yeah, you've brought up before that you've done these sorts of workshops and presentations for large groups of
mm-hmm.
like 200 to
mm-hmm.
small classrooms where you have 10 to 15 people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's interesting that you have those differences of, yes, your presentation with a large group might not be able to be as intimate, but then you can break it down to the smaller group
mm-hmm.
and really go
with
the flow.
Which is, I think we did with KCBI this
yeah.
year, was
yeah.
that... Adam Lin suggested that we do a big one, like in terms of with all grade nines coming in, because they've got a
yeah.
massive cohort.
Yeah.
And then I go into the classrooms
right,
individually.
After that, yeah.
And they've already been introduced. Some of them, as I said, have been I've been in their classrooms
yeah.
for a long time.
Yeah,
so it's like their third or fourth year. And this time when I did go, it goes, oh, yes, Ruhi. This is my third time. What are we going to learn today? So I think it's really good
yeah.
that they're still hopefully not bored.
No, it sounds like they're not.
No.
It sounds like they're. I'd honestly, like, even though, you know, when I was young, I would think the conversation of my sleep was bored. I would 100% be, I would be bored by it. I wouldn't care. I wouldn't want to hear it. But I didn't have this type of visual and this type of presentation and this type of – I always felt like when presenters came into me in high school, they really talked down to me and they really used big high-level words
mm-hmm.
so I wouldn't understand.
Well,
You don't do that.
Well, no, that's not true actually.
Well, you do, but you
I
explain
do,
it. You explain
but
them.
It's
in
really
a very
good because
way.
I also break those concepts.
Yes.
I want them
yes.
to understand big
yeah.
high-level words.
Yeah.
I don't want them because they are so smart.
Yeah.
They are so incredible. And if I can understand that word, which
yeah.
I want to take them on to that journey myself.
Totally.
It's like, where did I come from? Like in terms of understanding this particular concept, let me take you on this journey to understand this concept.
Yeah.
So you are able to use that language, because
yeah.
we talked about how important language is.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
it's not, for me, it's really important to understand, to introduce them to correct scientific terminology, but explain
yeah.
what it's all about.
Yeah. It's almost as if you respect them enough to explain everything you're talking
about. I have tremendous respect.
Isn't that interesting, listeners?
They are incredible. I learn so much.
Yeah.
I learn every time, every single time I go into the classroom. I learn so much
yeah.
from them.
And again, you know, I, in a non-subtle way, point these things out because it's not something that has been part of the education system for my time in education.
Majorly I went really lagging. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I went to high school. I went to elementary school. I went to high school. And I went to university.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for a youth group for a long time. We had lots of guest speakers, lots of people work with youth. And the best ones were always the ones that did this type of process, listening to what other people are doing, being able to not be a brick wall when it comes, this is my presentation, I'm not moving it. It to be able to flow and move within a conversation, to listen and to respect and to explain
mm-hmm.
and to justify and say, well, I'm using this word and this is what this word means. And this is like that type of thing does not happen. So that's really one of the refreshing things I got out of
mm-hmm.
seeing your presentation and workshop is you actually take that time
yeah.
to break those concepts down.
How many times do you usually hear like, oh, we'll get to that in a minute, and then you've forgotten the question that you've asked?
Oh, you never get to
mm-hmm.
it.
They get to the
never
part
to
that you asked and you're like,
yeah,
Okay.
The fact that you're able to go backwards, like you were saying.
It's not linear. It's not a linear progression. Yeah. And I don't care whether we come to the end or not.
Yeah.
And because there are so many different concepts within this, we can go any which way we want to, depending on where they want to go with that journey,
right?
Yeah,
it all depends where they want to go.
Where they want to go.
So before we started recording, you had an interesting statistic of how many students that you've worked with. Can you give that? You said
this year alone, over 1,500 students this year.
That's fantastic.
More than 25 workshops and over 1,500 students.
And more to come, which is great. Like you're going to continue to do these, which is clearly very important because if young people still have questions, it means there's still lots to do and there's lots of engagement happening.
Yeah, and there are lots of them coming up, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's every time. It's also refining my process. And every time I learn something new, I want to bring that in as well. Because what we know, you know, 10 years from ago to what is coming out in terms of scientific data, it's very important that they understand that as well. There are things that are shifted. How we thought about certain things is very different.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is different than what we thought about, all of those things, I think.
I think anyone who listened to our teen roundtable would agree with that. It's just like hearing four young people kind of talk about it, you would see that things have shifted. And you'd see that our way of thinking has shifted.
Mm-hmm.
You can just hear that in listening to other generations. So I feel like that was very clear from what I got out of just listening to that conversation.
Oh, yeah. I am amazed at how well they articulate it. Although my son reminded me that most teens are very well articulated.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm like, absolutely. I said, I know.
There you go.
I am talking to them. I have tremendous respect.
Absolutely. Well, this brings us just about to the end. We just want to wish everybody a really happy new year. And we hope that we're going to be taking a break.
We are taking a break.
And there won't be another podcast for another couple of weeks. We'll come back in January. But we want to take 2 weeks off, and it's important for us to take that time for ourselves, for family, for friends, for even for just like you were saying, reflection. It's a good time to reset and start anew and kind of grow in the new year.
That's right. Can't wait to go dark.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. We will see you in the new year, but we hope that you'll join us again. And we're going to be welcoming new listeners
absolutely.
In the new year. So we're very excited for that.
Thank you so much for listening to us.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep and Society podcast. Be sure to follow Ruhi Sleep on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Ruhi Sleep. You can also go to ruhisleep.ca for podcasts, blogs, and more information.